Hello and welcome to Cubicle Confidential, weekly advice for the working stiff. I'm Chris DeSantis, and let me introduce my co-host, starting with O's, the optimistic, the occasionally outrageous, and above all, one of a kind, Mary Abajay.
Hey, Chris DeSantis. I liked occasionally outrageous. That was really good. I like how you did that. Hello, everybody. I am Mary Abajay, and I would like to introduce you to my co-host, the open-hearted, the open-minded, and the organically amazing Chris DeSantis.
Organically amazing.
I was going to say organically orgasmic, but then I just thought that was going a bit too far.
Orgasmic. Yeah. That's a different kind
that's
of
a different,
show.
That's a different show. That's that puts the confidential in the cubicle.
We're going to rock the walls of this cubicle.
That's right. If the cubicles are rocking, don't come a knocking. Don't make me start laughing so early when I have to introduce the topic.
That's right.
All right. So, Chris, I've called you here today to, what shall I say, to put you on the spot, if you will, because, dear listeners, we are going to have three questions as per our usual, but this time Chris has no idea about what the questions are. All he knows is that the title of the show, the working title, is People Say the Most Annoying Things. So we're going to get Chris on his left foot, back foot, hot foot, and make him go dancing on the edge of the cliff without ever having any idea what we're going to talk about. Chris, how are you feeling about that?
Well, I'm slightly annoyed by the whole idea, but no. I don't know. We'll see how this turns out because this is quite spontaneous. Although I'll draw from my years of improv. Maybe I can pull something out of my hat.
I was going to say, this will draw on your years of improv. But you don't live a very spontaneous life in general, though, do you? You're pretty
measured
and controlled and scheduled.
Yeah, I'm a creature of habits. I have habits. You know, I have certain rituals that I have to do when I do them. I think... Do you?
Oh God!
Are you this way?
There's nothing I do that's not on my calendar 3 weeks in advance. I have no spontaneity. Like Chris DeSantis, if one of your best friends calls you the second this podcast is over and says, "Hey, come meet me for a drink in 15 minutes," what would you do?
Oh, I'd have to see about that.
I would be like, you know what? Yeah. How about 3 weeks from now? Could I meet you in 3 weeks? Yeah. So I think that's...
I totally. Okay. Yeah, exactly. That's the old, like, if they change a plan on you, you know, there's going to be a complaint.
Yeah. So all
right. My advice to people, if you have friends like us, my advice is if you're going to change on them, tell them right away and then run out of the room because they're just going to bitch about it for as long as you'll stand there.
We're way too structured. I believe we're called J's on the Myers-Briggs. All right, Myers-Briggs. Right. All right, so Chris DeSantis, we are going to talk about annoying things people say. But before I get to our first question, are there any annoying phrases that drive you cray-cray, either at work or in life? Things that you hate it when people say?
Well, I think when they get to cliche, you know, phrases that are cliche, you know, in business, there's so many. For instance, I think the find your purpose, I find that hugely annoying. That's annoying, horrible. Or your passion, find your passion. I mean, come on, you're going into work 5 days a week. What are you doing here? You know what I'm saying? So this language, or then the old cliches of our synergy. I see some synergy between us. You know, anything that is overworked to the point where it just becomes empty. It's sort of an empty phrase. I get annoyed with that. You want to roll your eyes, but often you just sort of, you know, you do an inward roll.
An inward roll. Yeah. So I did some research on annoying corporate buzzwords, and here.
Oh my God.
There's so many opinions. So here are some of the ones: synergy.
Synergy. Okay.
Outside the box.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Take ownership.
Oh,
value added. I hate value added. I hate all of these and I use them all the time. Circle back, reach out, going forward, proactive. I have friends that hate the word pivot. Make it happen. Where's the close the loop? Oh, disrupt. How can we disrupt something? I hate that. Some other ones. Let's table this. No problem, apparently, is people hate. Oh, it is what it is a much hated one. And yeah, those are some of the ones I found.
Yeah, I think I remember reading about No Problem recently. Somebody did a whole short on that. It's complaining because when somebody makes a request, no problem, as if it were a problem, meaning that the inference is what I'm asking a request of somebody who works here. You know what I'm saying? I'm the client. Why would this not, you know, why would this even enter in the realm of being a problem? That was the point.
Funny you should say that, because that leads right into our very first question. Are you ready?
Oh, really?
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
All right, here's the question. Greetings. I'm 68. I still work, and I still send handwritten thank you notes. I endeavor to be kind every day, to perpetrate an act of kindness every day. So why is it that, quote, no problem as response to a thank you irks me so? Is it a function of my age? Whatever happened to a gracious you're welcome? It's especially vexing when, quote unquote, no problem is uttered by a person whom I've thanked for actually doing their job. Note that I realize this may be a New York City specific patois, not a lot of you bet or have a blessed day is here. Signed, you ready? Forget about it. and it's a he says, P.S. send me a book, please. To which I say, no problem. we'll send you a book. So I'll let you know his address. So what do you have to say about this? I love this question.
Well, I love that this person is writing handwritten notes.
Yeah.
I think that's really gracious. I think the last person I thought who did that was George Bush Sr. Apparently, that was one of the traits that he would write handwritten notes to people, and then people treasure that. So I thought that was I like that they're doing that. The response they're getting, though, is again, this person is 68, and the people who are responding probably don't fall into the realm of 68, meaning that they are probably significantly younger. So I think this language is more normative for them, meaning that it's like, oh, okay, sure, why not? You know, my pleasure. You know what I'm saying? Any of these phrases that seem appropriate, but this is the one that sort of catches on to people. I think it started in Australia. I think it came from Australia.
No problem, mate.
Yeah, but it came over.
Yeah.
Right. It came over for that. But I see the point. I see the linguistic point of this, that this was a thank you. You're welcome is how what it should be.
That's exactly right.
But I think what we're doing is we're replacing one phrase for another. And I think that is what is vexing to this person is not it's I'll tell you what's probably another vexing is I've given you a written note and you're giving me back a cliche.
Yeah.
I think almost any phrase would annoy this person because if you throw back to me a cliche after the effort I did on your behalf, I find that annoying.
Well, you know, but I have to say I find no problem annoying too. I think when someone says thank you, if I say thank you, Chris, I think etiquette says the proper response is either my pleasure or you're welcome. I think saying no problem, I totally get why it annoys him. It annoys me because you know what else annoys me is when you, let's say you're walking down the street or you're walking through a crowd and you just say, excuse me, or, you know, I'm sorry, just as like a polite thing because you guys bumped into each other. It's nobody's fault, really. It's one of those polite things. And the other person says, oh, no, you're fine. Oh, you're fine. That drives me crazy. I know I'm fine. I was just saying excuse me or sorry to be polite because you stood in my way. Like, I hate it when people say you're fine after you say excuse me.
Well, that's interesting because they're trying to acknowledge the other person without being confrontive.
No, but
that's what they're saying. Meaning that's saying,
I understand the intention, but the impact is like I had done something wrong, but I really didn't do anything wrong when all I was saying was excuse me just to be polite.
Well, you did bump into them.
Well,
that
maybe they bumped into me, but I said excuse me.
Oh, maybe they did.
Well, that's my point.
Well, whoever says excuse me is the person who thinks they did the bumping.
Or it's just the person being polite who's acknowledging that there's bumping that has happened.
Oh, well, now then it's how you say excuse. So you bump into me and then I say, excuse me. So you see, now it becomes a question as is to say a challenge. You see, now it's so interesting that it's not only the phrase, it's the delivery of the phrase, the tonality of the phrase in forms of question or flat. But to your point, I think we have moved away from that which is Emily Post's version of life to what is far more casual or, quite frankly, casual leaning towards inappropriate. We are less polite as a society.
We are. And I get that people would say, oh, you're fine. I get that they are trying to be polite. But what it is just judgmental. Right. Like they are not putting themselves in a place where they're allowed to say whether you're fine or you're not fine.
Well, I think that's also ties to no problem is. No problem is about me.
Yeah.
Oh, it's no problem for me. You see what I'm saying? It's about me. You're welcome is about the other.
I agree.
In the sense.
I agree.
So I think that we again, in defense of this individual who wrote those notes, you could always say, while this is not a problem when you write your notes going forward.
No, I don't think, his question wasn't about writing notes. He was just saying he has a lot.
No. I'm saying included in the note.
Oh, okay. Wait, say that again?
Included in the note saying, I just want to take this time to appreciate it was never a problem working for you. I really enjoyed having this time with you. And there was no problem involved with this. So I'm grateful for, the thank you should incorporate the annoyance in it.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
That they don't hear it.
Yeah, that's funny. Yeah. But I totally get where this person's coming from. If I say to my team, I really appreciate you've done such a great job. Thank you. If they said, no problem, I'd be like, that's just so glib. It just feels like a glib, insincere taking in of the compliment. All right.
Although we did an episode previously on the use of my and our team.
Oh, God. You know what? You're fine. You're fine, Chris. that's no problem.
Listeners, we did an episode recently, a leadership cliffhanger episode, where we discussed the difference between my team, which is possessive, and on our team, which is not. Mary, of course, has gone back to the my team.
I own those bitches. Are you kidding me? I own them. All right. So we got to move on to our next question, which is kind of convoluted. So are you ready? Buckle in.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Dear Chris and Mary, love the show. I am in a bit of a quandary and would love your opinion. One of my most important and influential clients has asked me to intervene on a mutual friend of ours. Here's the story. My client, let's call her Diane, was at an industry event having an important conversation with some business community bigwigs when our other friend, let's call her Joan, approached them and started pitching Diane her services in an overly aggressive, shrill, and dare I say, drunken manner. Diane was horrified and embarrassed by Joan's behavior. I agree with Diane that someone needs to say something to Joan, as we've all seen her behave this way at industry events. We all like Joan, but she keeps shooting herself in the foot with her annoying drunk gnat routine. I just don't know how to go about having this conversation, or even if I am the right person to do this. Joan and I are in the same line of work, so I'm afraid that my quote-unquote coaching her may come across as self-serving. I told Diane I would talk to Joan, but now I'm having second thoughts. What should I do? Signed, Triangled in Trenton.
I see. So Diane approached this person to talk to Joan.
Yeah. So Joan made a fool of herself at this event, or according to Diane, Diane wants our writer, Triangled, to say something to Joan, because apparently, I'm guessing that our writer is maybe a closer friend. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my advice here would be Joan, this person accepted that, saying that they'll do it. They should go back to Diane and say, I've considered this, and they will not see my motive as pure.
Yeah.
Because we are in the same space. And while I agree with you, she needs to be spoken to, she will not hear me as it needs to be heard. She will hear me as a competitor and see this as, well, that's just you trying to do this to me. And so I think as a consequence of me discussing it with her, it will not change her behavior. Having said that, though, you have clout with her because she wants to work for you. And so and she has done this to you. So I can coach you through. My advice would be, why don't I pretend to be Joan? and we sit, I'll pretend to be Joan. You sit down with me and you tell me what you want me to do differently. I'll react as Joan, and then we'll hone the message in a way that you can deliver it to Joan in a way that she actually hears it. So let me be your coach to help her because she needs the help. That's what I think would be the short answer.
I completely agree. I completely agree with you. I don't think that, you know, and I completely agree for our writer to intervene on this. Joan is going to think it's, you know, more like competitive stuff. And the other thing is that there's no way for Triangle to do this without mentioning Diane, right? So you can't go have you can't go have this conversation and be like, well, a little birdie told me that you were drunk at, you know, the Chamber of Commerce meeting and like, you know, I heard that you offended someone, because it's going to go right back to Diane and make Diane look bad, right?
Yes.
Or she does. She could go to say, you know, Diane has asked me to speak with you. Well, that's not good either. So I think you're right. I think there's no winning for our our friend, our writer, our listener to get involved in this triangle. Ideally, Diane would say something, or Diane could bring a group of women together, because these are women who have seen this behavior, and say, hey, Joan, we're really worried about you. You know, we all love you, but we've all experienced this kind of behavior. I think this is a really tricky thing, because the subtext for me in this is that they care about Joan, and right? And Joan doesn't realize that she's making a fool of herself. And
this is the key.
Yeah.
The circle, this intervention that you're suggesting, I think has real validity to it, but it has to be done with people that truly do care about her, that she believes cares about her.
Yeah.
So this other person in the triangle who might be a competitor, if she's not close enough to this Joan, then she shouldn't be in that circle.
Yeah.
It should literally be her closest. And by the way, I would never have more than three other people.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want her at a table of nine.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I agree with you. And, you know, I think also I would say for Diane, in the note, it says like Diane was really embarrassed. Well, Diane doesn't have anything to be embarrassed about.
No.
Right. She was talking to some big.
Well, she's embarrassed through association.
Through association. But like, are we our colleagues, you know, keepers? Like, business community is large. Like, she does, you know, it's not like that was her best friend that came up to her drunk.
No. But I'm saying that I could see this spillage, meaning it's we are, again, you're a professional, and then somebody comes over to you. You're with a group of important people, and somebody comes over who assumes to know you, but really doesn't know you very well, and then goes on and on. At some point, you're going, oh my God. You know what I'm saying? You're trying to be polite and all this, but they might, and you're thinking, well, I hope they don't think that I'm a close friend of this idiot.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I probably would just throw the person under the bus when they walked away.
Well, that's like, Mary would do that, people.
Do you know that person? I don't know that person. But you know,
would say, shut the fudge up.
I've had this happen before with a friend of mine, something similar, where it was at some, you know, business community event, and a friend of mine who isn't really a friend, but like not like a best friend, and was a little bit overserved at this event. And someone else pulled me aside and said, I know that you and so-and-so are really good friends. I think that you should talk to her about how much she drinks at these events. And I was like,
No,
that's not my job. And I was just like, no. And I said, no, I said, listen, I agree with you, but I don't really think I'm the right person to have that conversation with that person. Have you ever been put in that job?
Oh, well, no, almost. I was at an event, to be unnamed. I was a speaker at an event, and they asked me to stay for the weekend. And so that night, they were going to have another event. They had an evening event, and it was a dinner and drinks and all of these things. It was a couple hundred people, maybe 200 people, and they had an act. They had an act, a magic act. And so my client was there, meaning the person I had hired me to be there at the table next to mine. Well, this person was drunk, super drunk, and really drunk, and then this person was started to participate in the magic act. It's under the hat. You know, that kind of thing, yelling this stuff out all the time. And it kept going worse and worse. And she, I don't, was it a four? And she'd yell this stuff out, you know, like all these inappropriate answers to the act itself. People kept looking over and I was there the whole time going, why isn't anybody caring enough about her to take her out of here so she doesn't look this bad?
Oh, yeah.
I wanted to get up. Yeah. I wanted to get up to do it. But I thought, look, she is known to all of these people. And I am not known to any of these people. And so in that sense, I'm the least likely person who should be addressing this. But somebody should address this. And finally, at the end of the act, somebody did come over and help her out of the room.
Oh my God. It awkward.
It was super awkward because as soon as it happened, somebody should have gotten up and said, you know, Betty, let's go for some coffee or something, because it was way out.
Oh, poor Betty. Can you imagine how horrified she might be the next day? Hey, Chris, Chris Santis, if I'm ever at a conference or in a business event with you and I get overserved, you have every... you have my permission to escort me out, to Dutch uncle me out of that place.
I will say, where is the bar that you were at? Because I got to find that one.
Okay, we'll get in line over there. All right, my friend, we have one more question. Are you feeling game? Okay.
I am. All right. So far, so good.
This is from Tired of the Tirade in Topeka. Dear Cubicle Confidential, I work in a tight-knit accounting department with 10 other people. We all get along great, except that one of our colleagues is a constant complainer, and I mean constant. This person is all wah, wah, wah all the time. Every conversation is about how somebody has wronged him or how unfair everything is. He's always pointing out how our manager plays favorites, which she doesn't, when he doesn't get a promotion or a plum project. And nothing is ever his fault. I honestly think he is his own worst enemy. Is there a way we can get him to see that he is driving all of us crazy and derailing his own career? Tired of the tirade in Topeka. That would be an annoying colleague.
Yeah, that's annoying. I think every listener who's listening to us has worked with somebody of this ilk.
Yeah, I call them career victims. They're the people that blame everybody and everything for their woes at work without doing anything to make their situation better.
Which I also think is interesting. I think some of these people, though, and I can't speak for all of them, but I don't think they see themselves as negative. Mm-mm. I think they see themselves as truth sayers.
Yeah, or former presidents.
Yeah, former presidents. But I don't see themselves in that, the vein of that. That's one of the difficulties, this, because in answering this, it's coming from a colleague, right?
Yeah. Yes.
A colleague. Yes. Okay, well, this means that they are at peerage with each other. And if a person is already suspicious of everybody else taking advantage of all things relative to this individual, what will they say if this person comes forward to them and says, you need to fix this? Oh, jealous much? And my point here is, I'd be very surprised if you will get any kind of behavioral change from a colleague to colleague. Closest you might do, and this would be based on our previous suggestion, if you got a number of people who this individual actually listens to. So one of the things I would do is I'd scope out, who does this person believe? Who does this person believe? Because a thing that wasn't in this this question is, how long has this person been doing this job? How long have they been getting away with this? You know, if they've been there for 25 years and this is who they are. That's who they are. But if they've been there for a year and a half or 3 years, you know, there's a chance. So I think there's some point you say, can't be done. So there's two recourses. One is get the people that listen to them, who really care about them. Although if they really cared about them, this conversation probably would have happened anyway.
Yeah, you know, people probably are cowards, but keep going. My husband always says to me, you and Chris talk about how to go have these conversations with people, but do you think anyone ever can? And I'm like, well, it's not that they can't, it's that they don't. They won't. But keep
they
going.
Don't.
Yeah.
They won't. Yeah. So anyway, so I would say this is a perfect intervention of people that trust this individual. Say, look, here's how you're coming off again and again. Your choice. Your choice. You can come off the way you want. This is what people are saying about when you say it.
Yeah.
And so I don't like them saying this about you, but I can't defend you when you keep doing it. So that would be the intervention, saying, I want to be on your side in this, but based on what they're saying, I don't know, how do I explain your truth?
Yeah.
So now the other choice is let the boss, you are one of many, go to the boss and say, can you talk to, you know, Bob? Bob's doing it again.
Bob's a downer, man.
Exactly. Bob's a downer. Bob's a downer. He really is a buzzkill, and he's doing it again. Can you talk to Bob? And I'm saying, just say that to your boss, and then independently have all the other colleagues say that to your boss, and let your boss sit him down or her down, this individual, and say, look, you can have any attitude you want. You just can't express everything you're thinking about that attitude.
You can be all your authentically negative self, just not here.
Just not, yeah. You at best be neutral. But I'm not listening to you. I'm not. This department functions better when we are all closer. Because don't get me wrong. I think I need to hear the negative. I don't need to hear only the negative. Yeah, and that's what's
the key
here.
Yeah, I love it. Right. Chris DeSantis, on the fly, you are on fire. On fire. So
I'm almost being mean.
Oh,
I'm
my gosh. Mean. I'm loving this. So yeah, I love it, what you said. And I think it's something that you want to address, because negativity, like emotions, are contagious in groups. So if,
absolutely.
And so if this person is like constantly negative and putting the negative emotional undertones out there with negative language, it is going to impact the morale of the team. It does need to be addressed. So I liked what you said, and I'm going to add just a couple more things I think you could think about. One is, when the person is like, oh my God, I can't believe I got passed over for this, or negative, say, right. Well, what are you going to do about it?
Oh, that's good.
Like, what are you going to do about it? Or what have you done about it? What actions have you taken? Oh, you don't think that works? What would work? So I would prompt this person to come up with a positive or an action or something. Or I would even say to them, you know what? You keep complaining about that, but I haven't seen you do anything to change it. So until you do, please don't mention that to me again. Like, you could give some tough love from colleague to colleague, you know, or just say, all right, I hear your concerns. What are your ideas for making it work? Like, I think that you do kind of the yes and with these negative people and encourage them to think differently. And, you know, I'm not sure I completely agree. I think colleagues actually might be more influential than bosses. It depends on how tight-knit. I mean, I think they could almost be.
Yeah. It could, again, this goes to my point. Yeah. It could, if you have a good colleague that has been your close friend, yeah, you have sway.
I mean, they say this is a tight-knit accounting group, so they could have some sway.
Yeah. Well, if this guy has some sway, or this person has sway, then yeah, maybe you can leverage it.
Swing and sway. So yeah, I would definitely.
But remember now, it's only coming from one person.
Oh, I think the group would have to do it. I think that, or several people in the group would have to do it. You know, the other thing would be, you know, you could say, hey, Bob, I noticed that you often look on the negative side of stuff. What are three positive things that happened today? So I happen to have a husband who likes to look at the glass half empty all the time. And so I'm forced. Oh my God, I think he's going to like, he hates it when I talk about him.
Your mic just went off, Mary.
Oh, my mic just went off. But like every now and then I'll be like, so what are you going to do about it? Or what's one positive thing you read today in the paper? Or, you know, try to craft this guy into a more positive mindset could be helpful too. It's sometimes just an exercise. Like sometimes people just get in the habit of only being wah, 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 Debbie Downer. I don't know. Exercising that positivity muscle.
I think those are two great suggestions. One is this group interaction. But you know what I was thinking about the group? Don't include them in it. No. Use your idea of the questions thing. Get all the group together and say, okay, I'll play Bob. I'm going to be Debbie Downer in this. I'm going to say negative things. And now everybody in this room come up with questions that challenge me. So what the point would be is everyone learns to handle Bob with the questions.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Bob starts to learn that, oh my God, they're going to hit me with the questions. The other thing I think you should do, to your point, is assign an upper. Assign, you know, somebody who's saying, okay, we're going to set you. You are the most positive person that we have in this department. We're going to unleash you on Bob.
I love it. I love it. Kill him with kindness and positivity.
Kill him with kindness.
Oh my God.
Exactly.
I love it.
I think that's what's the upside of that, Bob? What's the upside? And so what he'll learn to do is at least shut up.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, because if every time he opens his mouth, he gets like an onslaught of kindness and positivity. He is going to shut the fuck up pretty soon. I love it. Well, Chris DeSantis, I think we have done an amazing job today of dealing with annoying things that people say and do.
Well, that's just your upbeat personality.
I'm a positive Polly. I'm a day person. All right. Well, I think that's all the time we have for today. Thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another week of Cubicle Confidential. And of course, thank you to our senior executive producer, Jack Ettinger, still underpaid, still overworked. Thank you to everybody. Thank you to my amazing co-host, Chris DeSantis. If you have a workplace question or a cubicle dilemma, you can call us. You could email us to info@cubicleconfidential.com. You could tweet us at @cubicleconfide1. You could find Chris DeSantis, Mary Abjay, or Cubicle Confidential on LinkedIn, because you know what? We're here for you everywhere. And until then, until next week, we want you to work hard, be kind, don't be so annoying. And if you can't,
call us.
All right, see you next week.